podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap. Neil Atkinson with Leanne Prescott, Steve Graves, Gareth Roberts and Rob Gutman, who's having a think. We are going to talk about Liverpool versus Arsenal, the fact that Liverpool were tremendous, and then we're going to move ourselves along and talk about the Champions League draw as well. But we're obviously going to focus on the weekend's game. And Gareth, I came out of the grounds just amazed, to be honest with you. Not in a, you know, not because Liverpool were unbelievably good, though they were at times, but more the gulf between Liverpool and Arsenal. Arsenal are a side who've got genuine and honest pretensions of finishing in the top four, genuine and honest pretensions of getting somewhere between 70 and 80 points, and Liverpool treated them like they are the 10th best team in the country.
Yeah, and they played like that and treated it like they were as well. And I think that was the thing, really. That was what I came out saying to my mates, that, you know, it's Arsenal, that. You know, that is one of the big six, as it's now termed. That is one of the biggest football clubs in the country. And they came and set up and played like a team that just thought, oh, well, we've got a bit of a chance if we catch them on the break. And, you know, that's what sides much lower down the league try and do. So I was a little bit surprised. But also, as you say, it just struck you how good Liverpool were. But also how good Liverpool's mentality was. I mean, from the first whistle, if it's a boxing match, Liverpool have chinned Arsenal within 30 seconds. You know, Firmino's nearly putting it in the back of the net straight away because Robertson's charged forward, put it across the face of the goal. Firmino's not far away from that. And I think that just set the tone. At no point in the game, even when Adrian does what he does, even when there's, you know, the chance for Pepe when he goes through, I just wasn't worried at all. I was just watching it going, we're just a class above these.
It was mad watching Pepe go through for a number of reasons. One was the extent to which he's terrified, which is really strange. Like, it was a really weird, it's the oddest one-on-one I've seen in a while. But it was more, I'm watching him go through one-on-one, and I genuinely did at the moment where it went through my head, well, if he scores, we'll just score four.
Exactly. That's and I think everyone's the same. Like, there's no fear in the ground anymore, and there's no fear in the team either. And I think everyone's just really settled and calm. And, you know, I was watching some performances back, some bits of the match back, because, you know, I just wanted to sort of get in my head. Like, I thought in the ground at the time, for instance, Fabinho had played really well. And so I had a bit of a scout round to see if there was one of those videos, you know, Fabinho's every touch type of thing. And there was. And I watched it. And the thing that struck me about it, as well as him being boss, was just how calm he was. He was just sat there spraying these passes, always in the right place, but just really, really calm. And they're all comfortable in the shell of being basically the best or the second best team in the land, if not the world.
That is, Leanne, the calm that Gareth refers to there is a great point, and that is, they are so settled all of a sudden in being Liverpool. They believe in what they're about, and even at moments, for instance, when there's the Henderson error and Pepe breaks through, even there, everybody, broadly speaking, keeps their heads in a really strange way. There's not tons of scampering back. There's enough of it as Henderson eventually comes away with the ball.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, as Gareth said there, Liverpool don't lose their heads. I think that's really important. When Pepe's breaking through and Van Dijk's just there, he almost seems annoyed that he's defending, but he defends, and the chance goes, that's it. I just think that Liverpool aren't worried anymore. Liverpool have had counter-attacking teams come at them. They know what to do. They know how to play against it, and they played against it yesterday. They did their job. I agree. I don't think Liverpool ever looked like they were being really threatened that much. And I think that's a testament to not only, okay, the defence hasn't been great this season, but it's a testament to what Klopp has built. It's a testament to the mentality. It's a testament to what Liverpool are trying to do. They don't care who they're playing against. They'll play the same way and they'll win.
They also work things out quite nicely, Steve. I was a bit frustrated with part of the first half, which we'll come on to talk about. But there is there's an unbelievable assurance from them, which I think is part of what's being referred to. But it's not just an assurance. They have this wonderful combination of an assurance in not just the physical state, but also the mental state. They have an assurance in one another, and they know that they will come to solve these problems.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal present them with basically an invitation to play down the flanks, which is, it's interesting. A lot of people have criticised them for the diamond. There was a little bit on Match of the Day, and I think the analysis of Match of the Day was quite balanced, really, because they did say, you know, they showed the problems with it, but then they went, well, what do you do? Because, you know, we've seen sides with three at the back, we've seen sides do all types of different things to try and counter what this Liverpool side can do. They tried something different. You could argue it didn't work. You can argue that they didn't lose 5-1. And I think that, you know, if you were their manager, you might make that point, because it at least forced us to do something that was a little bit lower percentage, perhaps, than we would like to be doing. It's the fact that we've got
world-class delivery from both flanks, and particularly from Robertson in the first half, you know, makes it seem like a silly approach to take, but I can sort of understand why. And I think
Liverpool, I went through watching it, Steve. I'll do this now. I went through the logical sort of chain of it, and I don't think it's unreasonable. I can see why it's not worked and why it's a massive risk. But he thinks, I want to play two up because I want to be able to counter on them with pace, and I want to do that. Then he thinks, but I can't only have two in midfield. Mm-hmm. So then he's logically left. Basically, he's got very limited options, and therefore you end up sort of going, okay, I've got to go to a diamond. I'm either going to go 3-5-2, but he probably thinks, well, this side always batters teams that play three at the back, and he may not quite have the centre-half that he wants at this point, and he might not only want to have one on the side. So I think he's decided to try to block the midfield. Gone. You're always brilliant down the flanks anyway, so we may as well almost just tempt you to go that side, and we'll choke the middle, and we'll see if we've got something on the counter. And it nearly works, but as you say, nothing works at the moment.
But I mean, the two things that leads to is Liverpool, as you say, solving the problem or working out very quickly what the pattern needs to be. You know, from minute one, really, from the ball that Robertson plays into Firmino, and then working out the Liverpool press probably more than we've seen for a while. There's a couple of times we recover the ball literally in their box, and you know, the one when it lands at Mane's feet being the most obvious, and Arsenal just aren't really equipped to play over the press anywhere near consistently enough. There's a couple of times when they do and that actually gets them in, but broadly speaking they're trying to play some sort of hybrid of the Arsenal way, and it ends up with them just moving the ball around and ending up just getting themselves moved around by Liverpool's pressing, which just strangles the life out of them, I think, and means that they are limited to those sort of one-off chances. And coming back to the point about who they are and who we are in relative terms, you know, we've talked about how this is kind of basically a Real Barca situation now in the Premier League. And I came in expecting that this we'd be playing maybe Atletico Madrid, and really it's Valencia, Sevilla at best, I think, is where everyone's at now. I don't think there's even a natural, you know, looking at Spurs, there's even a natural third side to finish a few points off this two now.
I'm going to do the thing which I often do to you, which isn't fair, which is I'm going to hark back to the past quite significantly. And to me, this is now genuinely an 87-88 style gulf.
I'm your correspondent in the past.
You are my correspondent in the past at times, and it isn't fair. But this is now an 87-88 style gulf. This is now, everyone is now turning up to Liverpool and going, they are just vastly, vastly, vastly superior. That's the main takeaway from this, is that these finished fifth last season. As I said before, they'll have an eye on third, given Tottenham look wobbly as anything. They'll have an eye on scoring 85 goals, but they turn up at Anfield and they go, we cannot live with these.
Yeah, there's a sense coming into the season that some of these sides, the Tottenhams, the Arsenals, even the Chelseas, have talked themselves into the fact that City were the unstoppable force, and there's genuinely a conversation to be had about the rest, and that Liverpool, maybe there was some element of aberration in the performance, although they ignore the fact that we actually didn't get 88 points, we got 97 points and got to a second successive Champions League final. So in what sense it would be an aberration, I don't know. But you could sense that. And also,
I think maybe you can sense that in the media. I think you can now see people working within football feel very, very different.
No, I know. And but even as a sort of nervy fan, you kind of think, is this going to be more? We saw, actually, where I use as a parallel to Chelsea the other week in the Super Cup final. I thought that was a little bit of a wake-up call for us, that first half. They dominated us for periods of time and actually managed to look out equal for good stretches of that game, and actually made us look ragged in periods, although I think we worked them out, overcame it and finished the stronger side. But still, it was a wake-up call that some of these teams that finished 20-odd points behind us might not actually be as bad. However, that's looking like the outlier performance, I think, on the back of the Arsenal. Arsenal, as you said, I think Emery's gone into it and he was genuinely terrified. It's not just that we outplay them. They don't establish any phase of dominance in the game at all, which is very rare. I mean, all the other tonkings we've given to Arsenal sides down the years, they've managed to have serious spells. Actually, I mean, the 5-1 under Brendan. Actually, Arsenal have thoroughly dominate that second half and eventually get their goal. But it doesn't matter. We don't care by then. But I didn't feel they ever were able to really lay a glove apart from these very, very speculative breakouts they had. I don't think Emery got his tactics terribly wrong. I agree with what's being said. I think he very deliberately seeded the flanks. And actually what he did was to encourage, he didn't want the ball in, he wanted a type of ball in. He wanted our fullbacks to put a higher ball in than they were often used to. And I think he backed his centre-halves, although they're leaden footed, I think they're reasonable with the ball in front of them, and he backed them to be able to head things away, and so he allowed Trent and Robbo at times to put air on the ball. At that stage, it suited them. But once we worked that out, that was their game, I think we just moved away from them.
Is the
I haven't answered your question, really, have I?
You sort of have. It's fine. it's the cruising away, really, that I want to, you know, I want to come back to you on, Rob. It's almost becomes, you know, trite to say it, but that is, Liverpool are at this level, they're at the level that they play at, and Arsenal just let them sort of just acknowledge it. And I think that to me is almost the main takeaway, is the extent to which this is a really good side. They've just spent 80 million on a lad who plays up front, who we were theoretically linked with a great deal. You know, they've got Aubameyang in there, who's one of the world's famous strikers. You know, I'm trying to get all the words out in the right order here. And yet they just absolutely cede everything that matters within the game over to Liverpool and are reduced to counter-punchers like a side who are going to come 12th.
Yeah, they were like a side that realised they maybe only had two players who could even come close to a conversation in a combined 11 kind of side, that they realised they had no assets. You looked across that lineup, and I was going, wow, this is as weak on paper as I can ever remember an Arsenal side coming. So they really only had those assets, like Leicester coming to us and knowing, just get it to Vardy because he's a bit better than the rest.
There's something, I think, Leanne, in where Arsenal find themselves in terms of the... They're trying to solve the conundrum, as Steve said earlier on. They're trying to sort of work out, this is how we deal with Liverpool. And it almost gets to the point, you think, with Emery, where the way he's answered his own question is, I just don't want to get battered. Because we get battered every year, and I want the feel good to keep going. And I think that's part of the setup as well, is that he doesn't want to get battered. And that's, again, spectacular. He's thinking to himself, we've shipped four or five here. Three, four or five here the last five times we've come. And he's thinking, I'd like that not to happen, please.
Yeah. I mean, that goes to show what Liverpool are about, to be honest. I think a lot of teams come to Anfield now and they just don't want to get battered. And that's, you know, that's testament to the quality of the team. I would almost say, you know, you were talking earlier about how there were wide crosses in. I almost thought we were playing into Arsenal's hand at times. David Luiz on the pitch, there's no one to head the ball. That's not what Mo Salah does. That's not what Firmino does. Yeah. And so we don't score three. You know, that's the takeaway comment. So in some ways, Arsenal's tactic worked for a bit, but quality prevails. That's what Liverpool do. Liverpool put to bed these teams. I think Arsenal are on the rebuild job that we did 4 years ago. That's what they're doing now. And I agree. I think they came to Anfield and they didn't want to get battered. And they sort of did get battered in a way. Okay, it's not reflected 5-1 on the scoreline, but they weren't there. They didn't show up for me.
We end up, Gareth, in the situation that right now Liverpool find themselves, and it shouldn't matter this stage in the season. You shouldn't look at the league table until we're deep into September. But the truth of the matter is that where we are now, we have to. We're 2 points ahead of City, having had similar fixtures. We've both been to the South Coast. We both faced the North London side at home. We've had similar fixtures to City. But almost forget that for a second. We find ourselves in a situation where we're already 5 points clear of Tottenham, 3 points clear of Arsenal, 5 points clear of United, 5 points clear of Chelsea. And already it does look like this. The new season is now the same as the old.
Yeah, I mean, and you talked about the past before. Well, for me, it's similar in a way to when Everton were good. And I know we're going back a while there. But, you know, once upon a time, we did used to go toe-to-toe with Everton, and you'd watch Liverpool and immediately go, how did Everton get on? And I enjoyed those days, you know. Believe it or not, I enjoyed Everton not being shit but us still being better, because that really got up the noses. But that's what it is now. I mean, you know, I see this sort of, you know, continuous talk around sort of being one club being obsessed with the other and all this kind of shit and being in each other's heads. Well, yeah, because they're both really good, and one can stop the other's ambition. So, you know, that is going to be how it is. And the fact that we've already got a small advantage over them is fantastic. I mean, you know, look at the fixture list, and it was a conversation in here before we pressed record. You know, there's not... theirs looks easy for a bit, which is a bit of a shame. And, you know, there was only a very small part of me that got excited about Harry Wilson's free kick, because I thought, they're still going to win, aren't they? They're just going to be City. And they did. But I think we just get excited about us, get excited about what we're doing, concentrate on us. We've got the Champions League to come, the draw this week as well. And you just know that no one wants Liverpool. And again, that's a huge departure from where we've been in fairly recent times. You know, we've had some fairly dark days, and you know, I've been through some of the darkest, the soonest years and that sort of stuff. So honestly, we should all really, really, really be enjoying where we are now.
When you say about you're going, well, what are they up to and all of this sort of stuff, my thing is this. They've watched us play Arsenal at home at 5:30 on the Saturday, when the week before they played Tottenham at home at 5:30 on the Saturday. And I'm convinced, absolutely convinced, they're going, oh, could just be something here. And then by 60 minutes, they're going, God, they're good, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I think that's it. And I think that that's what we do. The right response to watching City isn't actually to get annoyed. It's to go, God, they're good, aren't they? And that is, you know, that's a fair thing to come away with. But that's what they should be coming away with when they're watching us absolutely pull Arsenal apart.
And they are. That is what they'll be coming away with, you can absolutely guarantee. I mean, we haven't got behind the scene cameras like we did, you know, a season or two ago. But when we saw that and you saw what Guardiola was saying about Liverpool, I'm sure he's saying the same now. He knows where the challenge is. We all know how big those games are going to be when we do finally play them. And in the meantime, it's just about continuing to churn these 3 points and every week. And I honestly don't see, you know, football's football and there is always the opportunity that you can lose to someone and it's unfair and all the rest of it. But if everything goes how it should do, who are Liverpool slipping up to? Because they're just so far ahead of everyone else, bar City.
The game itself and the way in which it plays out, there's already been some mention, Steve, of the fullbacks, of them having the ball, having the time on the ball. Liverpool had 15 shots in the first half, which is a remarkable number. It means they had an attempt on goal every 15 minutes. If you also put in there the crosses that get put in, some of them that are a bit speculative, I think you see a clear shift between first half and second half. The goal obviously helps, but of Liverpool calming down, I suspect there was words had at half time that you don't have to do that every single time. That was my only frustration with the first half. I thought apart from that, Liverpool were absolutely brilliant in all phases of play. It was just when they got near the penalty area, the decision making wasn't quite what you've seen it be.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think it starts with the second half because the situation changes so quickly from the penalty onwards that means that Arsenal sort of come out a little bit, which was sort of provides the opportunity for us to be able to play a little bit more on the break in a way that we weren't sort of able to when they were a bit more sat in the first half. I think the whole as a whole Liverpool, yeah, second half they come out of the blocks quicker perhaps than the first. You know, we mentioned the sort of early ball in from Robertson to Firmino, and then it's a little bit scruffy from there for about 20 minutes. I think Henderson's massive in just providing energy and sort of enthusiasm in that little period. There's one ball he plays out to Robertson which didn't make the highlights because nothing sort of came from it afterwards, but it was a fantastic ball that he plays. And Firmino's scoop and then shot, which just
Oh, it's the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
Again, someone that, I think that's what they need a rethink because they need to be showing that.
I know it wasn't on, was it?
It was just a remarkable thing to do.
The game at
1-0 as well, you know, it's showboating at a point when put with a purpose to it, which is Firmino summed up, I suppose. That Liverpool, it would have been nice if they'd have been able to play a little bit more through the middle and play the way they'd have liked to in the first half. But again, it's that patience and that knowledge that it will come. They just haven't got big enough. I don't want to use the blanket analogy again, but a big enough blanket to go across 90 minutes and go, we can stop you for 90 because we only need to be good for 5, 10, 15. And in this one, we were probably good for 25 after half-time. And that's been a fairly consistent pattern this season already.
Do you think we were a bit impatient first half looking back? Because I thinking up as you're talking, I'm thinking about some of those efforts we had. Mm. And they're snatched out a few look and you watch them back. Ginny Wijnaldum's, he's got a lot of time. You know, when he spins on it, breaks for him. He should wait for that to come down and he should just put it in. Mane can't believe it. That press you referred to earlier when he gets it. It's not his finest.
Slightly behind him, isn't it?
Yeah, even for me, you know, for all the languidness of the flick. The shot is maybe that's an unfair example, that one, but there's a number of them, I think, where, and I think it's because we're trying to force the game. I mean, the dominance in that first half is as dominant as I've seen Liverpool against the top six sides in memory, in a certain sense. And I think that was reflected in our desire to get the ball into the net in a way.
There's a little bit of sharpness and coolness, isn't it? Which is everything that Salah's goal is, you know, that composure and, you know, yeah, Mane's chance, he does sort of snatch at it. I think he should probably just finish it near post rather than going across the keeper, or he could literally feed it to Firmino or Salah, I suppose. But you rarely see someone do that. You know, you wouldn't fault him for taking the shot and taking a chance. It's just an unusual sort of circumstance, isn't it, to have that chance come to you. So you can understand why he snatches at it a little bit. There's a little bit of sharpness still to come back, certainly for Mane, I think. We've seen him come back incredibly well in the first couple of games, and it's only fair that might dip a little bit.
I think his work rate was incredible.
Played really well. I don't think there was any problem there, but I think perhaps just the absolute best quality that he can offer is going to maybe take a little bit to come back sort of after the international break again now.
But, you know, Salah isn't really, isn't hugely involved in the first half. He has one sort of shot across
the spin and shot.
One. Yeah, when yeah. Because you sort of could picture exactly how that one nestles in the corner, but he just is patient and he waits and it's going to come, and that's just, that embodies Liverpool at the minute.
I think the flip side of it as well is that Arsenal, to me anyway, were absolutely in the red zone all that first half. Yeah. You know, they were like, it was like Keystone Cops, just harrying, chasing round everywhere, and you just thought the level of concentration required here to keep Liverpool out, they can't keep that up. And so it proved, you know, the goal that Matip scores, they're so preoccupied with Van Dijk that he gets the space to put it in the back of the net. And Van Dijk's still appealing for a pen when it's in the back of the net. And then David Luiz becomes David Luiz second half. And I don't know what the man, you know, mentioned the manager before, and look, he's got to try and sort of sell that performance as not being that bad. And the fact that they get a goal, the fact that they get a couple of chances, the fact that it's only 3-1, I guess he can do. But to go as far as to say that the penalty is soft, I mean, I don't know what he's talking about there. The lad's got his shirt off. You know, everyone can see the stretch on the shirt. You're defo not allowed to do that.
Have you checked the rules, Gareth?
You know what I mean? So to stand in front of a Match of the Day camera or whatever and talk about it being soft, that was a sell too far. I get it. Like, I get that managers sell performances and sell what they're doing all the time. But nah, that was a pen, mate.
Yeah, I agree. We talked earlier about the crosses. I think Liverpool were impatient in the first half and it wasn't quite ticking. And, you know, it does second half, we get a goal, we're sound. But there was kind of, I don't know what it was, we were almost playing into their hands. We were doing what he set up for us to do. And we seemed quite happy to just be putting blunt crosses in the box like we had Andy Carroll to head them in. That, like, there was something that wasn't ticking. And as soon as it did tick, as soon as we get that goal, we settle down, we carry on, we go again. And that was it. And I think almost that's what this season's going to be. Liverpool are going to take their time to get into the rhythm, and that's fine.
I thought the Salah chance was a bit of a turning point looking back now.
Yeah, definitely.
It showed that we could open them up another way.
Yeah. I think Fabinho was really important with that because he just kept feeding those balls in behind, and Salah had the pace to run away with it.
Yeah. I mean, their big breakaway chance is down to the thing that makes the half look like it's a contest is down to a very rare Henderson error, isn't it? Yeah. The one that Pepe gets away from. But even then, I've watched it back. Although he looks like he's one-on-one, Andy Robbo's about to make a challenge if he tries to take another touch. They're not clear-cut. I mean, and the other one they're citing is the chances when Pepe bends it around. Actually, just digressing onto Pepe, I'm confused by him as a player. I'm not sure whether he's good. You could see him go push on and become a really top player at this level, but you could also see him be a bit of a Yannick Bolasie kind of figure. I know that's to stereotype a wide man, but I don't know, there was something a little bit unsophisticated about him. I thought I could see why we might have swerved it.
You can completely see why Liverpool, because he just wouldn't play in our front three. Like,
no,
he would have been a player on the bench for us, and we've got rid of
him already. Yeah.
You know, and obviously you get that, well, what if there's an injury, but you can't really live in the world of what if there's an injury at £80 million.
No. Yeah, I think that's becoming more apparent. Whilst we don't have injuries, that argument holds. you know what I mean?
You know, there'll be a point at which one of the front three can't play games for whatever reason, but increasingly you think that this side and this manager can work things out. There's plenty of ways you could reshape the system.
It's a game, Steve, where we often come away from some matches and feel a bit like, you know, the defence does this, the attack does that. Not quite sure on the midfield, did anyone see Wijnaldum? You sometimes have those sorts of games, and there'll still be another couple of them.
I think it's great.
Well, yeah. There'll still be another couple of them.
This Pepe about three times in the corner.
Well, this was one where I thought, you know, Arsenal are playing four centre mids and Liverpool's three absolutely dominate. They should be outnumbered, and instead they control the match. All three of them and all three showcase exactly what they're good at.
Definitely. I mean, I'd probably noticed Fabinho the least, but I think that's absolutely no slight on him. I think that he was comfortable, as Gareth said. He was really comfortable in the role he was in, and you know, I think if you were him in a specialist position, which is he's the best at the club, you'd be delighted to have the two players around you that he's got, you know, rather than maybe more traditional attacking midfielders, if you like, but footballers who are really box to box and can just do everything. The quality in it, I think the tempo that they set early on, those two ahead of Fabinho, I think, was really important in that Liverpool never got into that. You know, Arsenal's ideal would have been that the game sort of slowed down and Liverpool really never let it do that. They kept up quite a frantic pace, and we were worried. You know, we've been worried about this run of games, and it looks a little bit easier now for the next few in terms of spacing out. They've only had a few days after a really, really hard run, which involved that extra time and everything as well. And they looked so bright and fresh. Didn't look like there was a massive problem there at all in terms of fitness for anyone, you know, including some of the players who you feel have lost a little bit coming into the season. Perhaps Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, who actually did manage to get, you know, a fair amount of pre-season, looked a little bit off the pace, I thought, in the first couple of games. They looked much brighter again. I think Trent still got a little bit of work to do, just find his touch and his real quality. But
his eye's not in quite, is it?
It's not quite, but you see those spells with him, don't you, where it's not quite there. I thought defensively he was much improved from where he has been. You know, I've been one of those who's sort of wavered around, should Gomez get a little run at right back? And I think, you know, the manager's done the braver decision, which is to keep your real quality going forward in the side. So just there's just so many positives, but yeah, the midfield just absolutely vindicating brave decisions again that he's making. There are plenty of people who would advocate for other things than Henderson and Wijnaldum in front of Fabinho.
I think he's found a way to make that midfield, which was sort of a bit maligned last season, any combination of three from the four, which you could throw Milner into that mix, as being workmanlike and a bit blunt, and something you take where, you know, you're playing more of a 50-50 game and you've got to dog it out and you let your front three do all the fancy stuff. I think we're evolving, since Henderson's has moved to that number eight, we've evolved the system whereby it's almost Fabinho is a third centre-back and they're allowed to be more progressive midfielders. You see, Wijnaldum is popping up in pockets and Henderson obviously has got this drive to him now, which I don't think we saw in him as a number six. So I think we found a way of making that three a much more attacking unit than it was.
Yeah, and it's not that it's not been there for them. It's just they've been doing their job when they've been more conservative. Yeah. You know, there's not many workmanlike midfielders who score two in a minute against Barcelona. And I think, genuinely, there's people pointing, Ndombele, exactly, or footballers who we should sign, who we just sometimes don't value, particularly the midfielders that we've got. You know, someone of the quality of Wijnaldum is arguably not a guaranteed starter for Liverpool every week. Well, what an amazing position that is to be in.
Gareth, looking into that sort of front three, and again, you can end up just every week feeling as though you're saying the same thing, but then that's what it is to watch genuine world-class footballers. And Salah is yet again demonstrating he's genuinely world-class. Yeah. The goal, even the penalty now, you know, but the all-round contribution and the fact that he's got them absolutely terrified all game, I think it's, again, because it can end up feeling a little bit mundane, this is watching one of the best footballers in the world, and by that I mean top five, and watching one of the best footballers we'll ever watch in the whole of our lives.
If you flip it on its head and imagine Mo Salah in another team shirt. So what came to my mind was, remember when Arsenal had Thierry Henry in his pomp and how we all knew he was brilliant? And, you know, don't want to throw Carragher under a bus, but Carragher got absolutely ripped by Thierry Henry. And we all knew it was going to happen. We knew you couldn't stop him because of his class, because of his quality. And that's where we are with Mo Salah, I think. And you know, that goal skins David Luiz and he's just away. There's all kinds of people trying to keep up with him, get with him, push him off the ball. And his strength and his pace and the finish are all absolutely brilliant. And that initial touch as well, which, by the way, is from a Fabinho pass, an early pass, a nice pass. What do you do to stop him? What do you do to stop our front three? And we all talked there before, we gave Arsenal a little bit of a credit for initially how it worked out for them in terms of trying to stop us. But as I said before, I just think it was red zone and it was eventually going to break down. And it did. They can't. It's keeping up. It's keeping Liverpool out for 90 minutes.
On the red zone thing, one of the things that hits me now is sides play. So Southampton are another example of it. Southampton, for basically from 15 to 45, play the very best they can play.
Yeah.
And they've kept Liverpool at arm's length and maybe they've created a few chances. and then Liverpool kick on. You've just been playing the very best you can play, and then Liverpool kick on. And yeah. So at the moment you need to go down a gear, Liverpool go up a gear. And I'm just watching, and that's what happens to Arsenal. Arsenal, yeah. Monreal, I want them sub for humanitarian reasons, second half. And I think if he'd been, if the manager had been on the other side, I think he would have done, because you could see a couple of times he just stops because he's absolutely shattered and he doesn't know what to do next. And he's 33 and he shouldn't be playing left back against Mo Salah.
Well, it's just incessant, isn't it? And I think, you know, you think back to, you know, Rodgers' time here, and he talked that, you know, we played some fantastic football under Brendan, but equally though, you know, he'd come out with phrases like he talked about resting on the ball. There's no fucking resting on the ball under Jurgen Klopp, is there? And this is the thing, you know, it's like you say, they seem to work it out for so long, but then they're just fucked and they can't keep up with Liverpool's incessant attacking, incessantly going forward. It's like, well, when are these boys going to have a breather? Because we need one. And Liverpool teams don't need a breather. And I mentioned it the other week, and I think it's a drum we just keep banging to get in everyone's heads. Liverpool scored more in the last 15 minutes of games in the Premier League last season than anyone else, more than Man City. So they can keep going, and they've got more options on the bench now as well. As things stand, you know, in terms of people being fit and stuff like that, there's a few players probably getting frustrated there that they're not getting on. But they'll get the call at some point, because from now on we're going to start seeing two matches a week rather than one, aren't we? So, yeah, it's all good, isn't it?
Do you know what I think that Salah goal does? Apart from serve notice that he's very, very good still, it serves notice that you don't try and defend high up against Liverpool. Yeah. There's been a little bit of murmurings that our defence has been a little slightly more wobbly because we're playing a higher line and we're taking more chance of whatever. So you sort of say, you could see Norwich were a bit bolder, maybe Southampton were a bit bolder. Arsenal actually weren't a bit bolder until they were a goal down, and then they immediately paid for it, well, twice paid for it. And I think it'll prove a bit of a marker result performance. It'll have people watching and they'll be going, ah. I mean, Burnley, for example, next weekend, I think they'll go, they're in reasonable form. They're a handful, but they will bide their time to use their set pieces. They will not come at Liverpool all rampaging. They will look to be compact and contained even on their own ground. I think the short-lived myth of bring the game to Liverpool was, if not entirely put to bed by that performance by Liverpool, I think it was set back quite considerably.
Leanne, mentioning the defence there, Rob's segued in quite nicely. I think that Joel Matip's performance at the weekend was absolutely tremendous. And there's times in both halves where he's nicking the ball ahead of the forwards, ahead of Aubameyang, 15 yards into their half. It's so front foot, it's so dynamic, and his reading of the game, his anticipation was second to none.
Yeah, I mean, I was one of these people that actually said that Gomez should start just purely because of his recovery pace. Matip proved me wrong completely. I was happy to celebrate his goal. I think he deserves massive credit for the way he's kind of come into everything. And everyone kind of thought that he was just fading into the background. He didn't really have that much of a Liverpool career. He's come in now and he's almost been faultless since he came into the side. I actually saw a tweet yesterday and I kind of agree with it. I think he's been better than Van Dijk since the turn of the year. I think he's been that good. And as you say there, he's so dynamic. He's pressing the ball up. Arsenal playing a high line, Matip was fine to take the ball. He was going on forward with it. He was trying to make a pass, trying to get it into Fabinho, who was getting it into Salah. There is that intricate passing, forward thinking. And I think that's what Liverpool need from their centre-backs. And that's what he's doing so well.
He's... Steve, Phil said on the post-match show, and I think it's absolutely right, if Liverpool had bought him, if Liverpool had bought him in January, we would be, and Liverpool had paid 60 million, 70 million for him in January, we'd be saying, what a buy that was, what a move.
It'd be final piece of the jigsaw stuff that you'd be talking around it. You'd be going, you know, incredible move, and we've got this one of the best young centre-backs coming through as well, what a great position we're in. It reminds me a little bit, I think when he did first arrive and he did first play, and this is obviously pre-Van Dijk, there was a bit of that. We did all go,
he had a good month
to play. Yeah, he can really play football. And, you know, when he came forward and looked to get involved, it wasn't the joke that it sort of became, even though it never cost us. You know, there was some times when he looked a little bit inelegant. But broadly speaking, he always had that intent there and that ability there. And then he has a little bit of a dip, but he's come back so strong, and he's younger than you think. I think there's one thing about Matip that I think people sort of assumed, because he was a free transfer, he was, you know, in his sort of mid-30s or something, when he's pretty young for centre-back, and he's growing into it. And it obviously, Van Dijk helps so much, and Alisson has helped so much. Firstly, the fact that we apart from the, you know, the one crazy moment, really, the goalkeeper change didn't feel like it made a huge difference to either of the centre-backs, certainly to Matip. And secondly, and I'd never wish this to happen, but I don't think the Van Dijk injury scenario that has haunted all of our dreams or nightmares, you know, barring it being 6 months, but, you know, if it was 3 games, 4 games, I think you'd feel we're much better equipped now to cope, much better equipped than we were. If you're starting with Matip and Gomez in this game, you're right, you can then go, well, we've got Gomez's recovery pace in there, and we've got Matip, we've got both of their leadership, because I think they're both showing that leadership, professionalism and quality, and that's a huge testament to everyone, really, to Van Dijk himself as well, because I think he's helped sort of remake and remodel this defence and what it's all about. But Matip, I mean, his involvement, you know, you could see him playing centre midfield for a team, or defensive midfield, number six for a team lower down the league, or you know, in a different league, because he's got quality on the ball. It just doesn't look like he has. And sometimes that's the most deceptive thing for other teams as well, is they don't expect him to pick a pass that he can pick, and the more and more he backs himself. Yeah, you can see it. You know, he just his body's sort of outgrown it, I suppose, to a certain extent. But he's got that real quality and class on the ball, and I think that does allow Van Dijk at times as well to cruise a little bit through games where we need him to, because we need him, ideally, despite what I just said, we need him to play probably 60 games this season. So.
I think part of the judgment on Matip, if he continues in this vein, he continues to develop and look, albeit world class, I think we'll come to see the phase beforehand as actually what it was, which was an injury hit phase.
Because,
I mean, I hope he stays fit now, but actually, if you look at the period preceding last season's the run that starts last season, he's very rarely more than 6 weeks away from his next injury, isn't he? Continuously, so he's always on the back foot, always protecting his body a little bit. So, you know, Klopp invested in him early doors, not as an interim. I think he thought he was getting a genuine talent. I think he was only 22, heading for 23, as you said. He was young when he came in on this. This is something the manager spotted. This was a serious footballer.
And he's had, you know, there was some illnesses in there and stuff. He sort of practices him with Lovren as someone who was always going to be 2 or 3 games away from a little problem that would keep him out, and that seems to have been overcome in the way that it does for players when they mature, and it hasn't for Lovren. And then, personally, you know, I think there was a bit of a dispute with the Cameroon national side and stuff like that. Yeah. He's retired from that, hasn't he? And all of that, and changes in culture and everything that you allow for some players, and somehow we don't for others. I'm glad that we sort of are now, I think, seeing the best of Joel Matip, and everyone sort of appreciates that.
Moving it sort of along, Gareth, just quickly on the keeper. He ends up with not a lot to do, but he does make the big save, and I do hope he feels good for making the big save. You know, I think it's still a little bit dodgy, and the distribution is going to be... It's just a fine margin between genuine world class, which is what Alisson is. You know, for instance, the ball that actually leads to the Salah goal comes from Adrian, but it's the wrong ball. Trent ends up in a bit of a mess and rolls it into Fabinho, which is maybe not even the right pass, but Fabinho makes it the right pass and does brilliantly. But that all stems from the keeper maybe doing the wrong thing. But it's only a maybe, and it's only just what he can do, and what we need him to do is save things when called upon. And I think that's it. And I think if you're the gaffer there, he comes off and you say, you saved it when you needed to, mate. You know, you couldn't do anything about the goal. All right, we move forward.
Yeah, I mean, he probably gets away with it a little bit, doesn't he? And that, you know, Aubameyang's not far from putting that on the net when he decides to come out. And there's no need for him to come out there. You know, Van Dijk's there pretty much. And Van Dijk's telling him to stay as well. And then for some reason, he was shouting back at Van Dijk afterwards, and I'm not sure what he was shouting back, but it was definitely him who was in the wrong. I don't know why he'd come that far. That was a bit of a sort of brain fart situation. Maybe it's in his head that he needs to come, that he needs to be off his line quickly, knowing what Alisson's done for us, and maybe knowing what the criticisms of Mignolet were. But look, I'm fine with him, broadly speaking. I just think, you know, we've talked about him before, and I just think he's a second choice goalkeeper, and when the first choice goalkeeper's the best or one of the best in the world, then there's going to be a drop off, and we've just got to get used to that fact. And I think we just get through this period, we stay behind him, we don't create the situation where it's like, ooh, any time it goes near him, you know, because Anfield's been really positive now for some time. Thought it was great again on Saturday. Thought, you know, loved how much everyone was getting into telling Arsenal that we were champions of Europe. And sort of long may all that continue. Let's not develop a story around one of our players players where we're beating them up ourselves, because that doesn't help anyone.
Do you remember Arsenal?
It's done fine.
Arsenal, we went, our crowd, which was raucous and noisy, went quiet for about 2 minutes in the middle of the first half. And they just picked that gap, Arsenal, to sing, we forgot that you were here. They did, unbelievable. It's like they were waiting for their moment. They've been quiet for 30 seconds. Let's go for it. It was so out of a, yeah.
I don't think his kicking is bad. I think he backs himself as if he's someone who can kick the ball better than he can. Yeah. But I think that's what the manager wants. I think he probably picks the wrong option, which results in the goal, but the real wrong option will be to hold onto it and hoof it down the pitch, on the bounce, in a way that I think would reassure a lot of us, but is not what this team's about and not what this manager wants. So he's coming and he's doing a much better impression of the type of goalkeeper that Liverpool would rather have than the options that we did have. The option that we did have, who I think is technically a better goalkeeper at saving things, but this is a goalkeeper who's doing something different and doing... I think I've seen every goalkeeper I've ever watched do that thing that happens with the Aubameyang chance when he doesn't quite sort out, doesn't want to collide with his own centre-back, doesn't want to play it off him, doesn't want to do the thing that they probably should do, which is just kick it horizontally off, just out for a throw-in, because that looks horrible. But because it looks horrible, no one ever wants to do it.
Edison does it 2 years ago, doesn't he?
Most goalkeepers have done it. I suppose it's the fact that I've seen him do things that I've seen other goalkeepers do, like twice in a row now. So, you know, it's not ideal.
It's a montage.
A small sample size. We're seeing the full range of his qualities. But I think he does well to stand up for the one-on-one, and he doesn't seem to be rocked and set back by his mistakes. It doesn't stop him.
Do you think he's trying to be too Liverpool? Because I had this discussion with someone yesterday. I almost feel like he's trying too hard to pass the ball out the back. He's come in and he thinks, that's what I need to do now. And he's trying too hard to do it, especially with this new rule.
Yeah, I'm happy with him doing it. I think he's got to. He's not going to have that long, hopefully, now to play in that role. And if you don't back who you are and the type of player you are, and I think he is that type of goalkeeper, I don't think he's sort of adjusting his game. He's just not as good at it.
Yeah.
And that's not so, think, no blame. He's I not think, as good as the best in the world.
I think a couple more decent performances, I think a couple of clean sheets, and error-free games from him, would I think you could see him go up a level. Confidence. He's coming in, it's a lot of pressure, really. He's in Alisson's shadow. Everyone's watching if he's going to make ricks. He has made a terrible rick at Southampton. I thought he looked 15% better than he has done. I thought he looked slightly more at home in our goal. I don't think he made people nervous. Generally, I'm never going to stop criticizing.
I think the crowd is good around.
I think Mignolet endlessly made the players around him nervous. I don't think Adrian makes players around him nervous. And I think once he begins to exude confidence, his body language says, I feel at home here in a couple of games. Well, it might not happen, but it could happen to him. I think Burnley's an interesting test for him. I don't know what kind of goalkeeper he is when the ball's hung underneath his crossbar. I think we're about to find out. But I think if he gets through that test, that could be a big win.
There's a couple of nice takes, second half, I think, that he just claims and catches, and no real worries. Didn't seem to sort of struggle. I mean, no, it's Arsenal, so it's not quite the same test that Ashley Barnes and Chris Wood are going to provide. But he doesn't seem particularly fazed by that. But we'll see.
All right then. Move forward towards the Champions League draw. Liverpool can get. It looks like it'll be a combination of Ajax isn't 100%, but it should happen. Atletico Madrid, Borussia Dortmund, Napoli, Shakhtar Donetsk, Benfica, or Real Madrid.
Pot two.
That's pot two. Yes. Pot
Let's
three.
Be right.
Sorry.
Let's be right, Neil.
Mm. All right. Pot three
Pots matter.
Lyon, Bayer Leverkusen, Valencia, Red Bull Salzburg might actually get in. Inter Milan might be in. There's a couple more that are a bit touch and go because there's a little bit of dependence on the qualifying round. And pot four gives opportunities for Lille or Genk, Lokomotiv Moscow, Galatasaray, Atalanta. Atalanta will play their match at the San Siro, Dan Austin was telling me authoritatively last week, which is pretty exciting, actually. The opportunity to go to the San Siro, but not
before
face
demolish it.
Before they demolish it. Leipzig and I think FC Copenhagen are in there as well.
Slavia Prague or Cluj, Neil.
Excellent stuff, Rob. So I like
I'm
it.
I'm very up on this one.
You're very up on this one. So who do you want?
I want the group of shite. I always go for straight for this path of least resistance for Liverpool. So who's the shittest in pot two again? Is it Benfica, probably? I think Benfica are probably the weakest in pot two. In the pot four, I definitely want Slavia Prague or Cluj. I think that's a nice European away, that one, and neither are very strong. Three, Lyon. I think there'll be a reasonable handful. Nice place to go, but I don't think they're very good, really. Who else is crap in pot three, remind me?
Who else is crap in pot three? Salzburg.
Salzburg, oh yeah, please.
That'd be nice.
I think Young Boys are in the mix.
Are they indeed?
Young boys are in the mix.
I mean, potentially. The main part of all this, Gareth, is what you said before, which is everyone will be scared of us. We shouldn't be scared of anyone. I couldn't really be bothered getting Real Madrid in that it'd become a big psychodrama. I can't really be bothered getting Atletico Madrid either because they'll make us run loads. But mostly, I'm just a bit like, yeah, it'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm like that as well. I mean, you read all those names out and I was just kind of like, okay, Sam, we get who we get. I mean, you know, obviously there's some nice sounding trips in there. I'm sure lots of people like the prospect of going to Amsterdam, and Salzburg would be another nice one. But yeah, I'm honestly not concerned. We've won the European Cup, we haven't done it where it was sort of, you know, we did it by some kind of fluke with a load of crap players in our squad, and then we drop off a cliff. We've done it, and we're still at that level. We'll be in the latter stages of the competition again, whoever we get, and we'll be challenging for the league again. And I'm absolutely fine with whoever we get.
Be nice to fly at it, I have to say, given our fixture congestion around Christmas. Be nice to, I know it never happens this way. Yeah, to get that, to get the last game being a dead rubber. I mean, truly a dead rubber, so that we can go, we've won the group now, I'm not just qualified. That would be, that's the dream scenario here. So I think the draw matters in that sense. If we got, it's likely to be quite tough because there's a better than a third chance we get one of the Madrid sides, and that's going to be a handful, and we could get into Milan, what, blah, blah, blah. But that's the dream for me because December's got the World Club thingy and all the other congestion issues. So I think that should be at the back of our minds.
Leanne, any preferences from your side? Anything that you don't want?
I feel like I'm the complete opposite. I want us to get the good teams. I want us to get the hard teams. I think
you want the glamour.
Yeah. I just think you need momentum in this time of the year, and Liverpool always rise to the big occasion. We saw last season, ironically, we started the Champions League so poorly because we almost walked into games and we thought we'd won them before we even played. I would rather us play the Real Madrids and the Atletico Madrids and whoever, because I just think we rise to the occasion. It brings the best out of us, and then we can repeat that on the league.
I'm just a little bit scared of, not scared is the wrong word, but we've got a period where, so it's United the weekend, Tottenham the following weekend.
Yeah.
I don't want Real Madrid in the middle of that. Because we did, although there were some games which we were casual in, I think, like...
You know, United are the shit.
Like Red Star. Yeah, I know, but it's a derby. Yeah, we didn't beat them last time we went there and we were still the same. True. So it's not never a given going there. Also, you know, Napoli and Paris Saint-Germain were handfuls for us.
Yeah.
I'd rather slightly less handfuls. I think we deserve it if we're in pot one.
I think there's an argument for the strongest pot two that you can get, and then we sort of just divide the spoils among two terrible pot three and four sides, and most of three and four sides are pretty differing degrees of poor. So I think that there's no real... It's hard to construct a real group of death. You probably won't go Inter in pot three would be the hardest. And Real Madrid, Valencia maybe in pot three.
Real Madrid, Inter, and then maybe...
You couldn't get Real Madrid and Valencia, could you? So you'd have to be Real Madrid, Inter.
Real Madrid, Inter, and say Galatasaray.
Yeah.
Just feel a bit like... God, I mean,
Galatasaray, or you could... You know, there's the journey times, I think, as much as anything. So you say to me, we play United and Spurs with Real Madrid in the middle, I don't really want to do it. Playing Shakhtar Donetsk in the middle, or although, are they even playing in Donetsk at the minute?
Donetsk or pot two?
You never know with these lads, do they?
Pot two. Playing them.
Sorry?
They're the easiest pot two. Oh, I like that.
I don't know what that was, but someone's about to play Zed Cars.
Bounce balls, dude. What did you say? It's the Shakhtar boys.
They probably are the easiest side, but they are... They are the journey that you probably don't want in there. I don't even know how it all works out, whether that's even possible. I think just at Anfield, we can beat most... You know, we were terrible away in the group stage last time, and we were still more than capable because of our home form. And, you know, you'd have to hope that we do win a game away this time, and that would massively help.
Do you want to put Naby Keita on planes, I'm realising? He always gets injured after he's been on a plane.
Mr T.
Yeah.
Something about...
you, Dennis Bergkamp, for Mr T.
He needs upgrading.
You'd love that. That's your dream dinner party.
Yeah, that exactly it is. 3 minute a dinghy across the med.
All right then, fabulous stuff indeed. Thank you very much to Steve, to Rob, to Gareth and to Leanne. Liverpool are most definitely on the march like nothing you've seen in your whole lives. They're absolutely fantastic at the minute against Arsenal. They're not going to stop anytime soon. Champions League draws, Burnley next, then Newcastle. Bring it all on. Sports Social Podcast Network.